Fine.
So we've been gone for a little while, a couple of weeks.
Yes, it's been a while.
Things have been busy. So this is another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. I'm Christian Horn, and I'm here with my good friend Paul Edwards. And
yes.
I kind of wanted to talk about, I saw How to Train Your Dragon 2 over the weekend.
Good.
And I think this movie is like one of the best, if not the best animated movie that I've seen in like a long time, especially for boys. You know what I'm saying? Like as a kid's property, I just found it to be fantastic. And I know you saw my post on Facebook where I was like, you know, I mean, this movie delivers on the promise that Godzilla, you know, failed to come through with. You know what I'm saying? In which there's like just dragons and flying and there's like fighting. I mean, you know, it's not as dour as, you know, Godzilla, thankfully. But, you know, I just honestly think it's just beautifully designed. The characters are like more three-dimensional than Aaron Taylor Johnson, you know, or whatever the guy's name is. And, you know, it just elicited such emotion in me that I was just like, I can't believe how good this is.
Yeah.
And the thing that I was disappointed in is that, you know, I mean, it only really cleared like 50 million, like opening weekend, which, you know, doesn't sound terrible, but I don't know what the budget is. I got to look it up on Box Office Mojo, but you know, I think that's pretty bad for like a studio, especially something like DreamWorks that's been like suffering in the past couple of years, you know.
I'm looking at the little weekend box office thingy, and it says that 22 Jump Street got 57 million.
Yeah.
And How to Train Your Dragon 2 opened with 49 million, which is, it's kind of surprising because usually kids' movies during the summer, you know, make a pretty big, do pretty well.
Yeah. Oh, well, according to Box Office Mojo, it looks like the production budget, you know, without marketing and stuff like that, is about 145 million. So domestic, you know, I don't know what international is. It doesn't say here, or at least I can't see it, is about 60 million. So it looks like it could be, I mean, in good shape. I got to say to anyone who's listening or anyone who, you know, is kind of waffling on that, you know, the first movie was really solid, really good. I was very surprised by it because DreamWorks, like when the first movie came out, like I think maybe the only thing they had done that I really liked was Kung Fu Panda, which I thought was really solid, but not like super great. And How to Train Your Dragon was like super great. Like I was like, oh, this is a movie like with heart, and it doesn't, you know, resort to sort of like cheap, you know, gimmicky like humor and you know, stupid, what do you call that? Like references to the
sort
president?
Like topical humor.
Yeah.
Like pop culture references and things like
yeah,
that.
It didn't have any of that. And apparently directed or conceived by the guy who directed Lilo and Stitch, which is, again, one of my favorite Disney movies of all time. So, you know, I guess what I'm wondering is, like, why does it seem like DreamWorks animation anyway is kind of like the redheaded stepchild of like the animation industry, you know? What I'm saying?
Let's look at that a little bit, because, you know, DreamWorks, you know, it's been around for a little while. You know, of course, it's actually 20 years old this year.
Yeah,
which is, wow, kind of hard to believe.
I know.
You know, and it's in sort of its second phase of existence now. You know, the first time when it first started out, it was famously DreamWorks SKG. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Spielberg, Katzenberg, and Geffen.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, you know, they were really trying to become a full studio that developed and produced films, video games, television programming, music. You know, I mean, you know, pretty much anything that the big studios that were already doing, like Universal, like they were going to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you remember how huge that was when that announcement came down? Like, that was, you know what? Probably the announcement would have been like 93 or something.
Yeah.
Or when it was going to happen. And I just remember being in LA, and at the time, you know, I was an actor. So just like seeing that these three guys, these three like giant like powerhouses in the industry were going to go off and form their own studio. There was such a sense of like, holy cow, like all this optimism, you know, mm-hmm. to it, and all this sense of possibility. I mean, think about it. Spielberg, you know, being part of a studio, a movie studio. Jeffrey Katzenberg,
right.
who, you know, is partially responsible for, you know,
sort
a
of
lot of like, yeah.
Renovating Disney into, you know, what it sort of is as a modern entity.
Yeah. Yeah, The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, the Lion King. You know what I mean? Just making it, helping revive it into a powerhouse again, mm-hmm. you know? So I just remember all that optimism that came out of it. And it just seems like, you know, I mean, the film division doesn't really exist anymore. You know, they got sold off. And I'm not sure exactly what happened to the music arm of it.
Yeah, the music division was shut down in 2005, pretty much. Well,
did Geffen just absorb it? Did the Geffen Music Company absorb it? Or?
Yeah, actually, like, so, you know, just from the bit that I've read about it, you know, the record company just never really did, you know, what it was supposed to do. And, you know, it sort of came at a weird time, too, where, you know, digital music was and file sharing and, you know, all of that stuff sort of became prevalent, you know, and so basically they sold most of their music. Most of the record company was sold in 2003 to Universal.
Yeah.
And then there was a separate part called DreamWorks Nashville that was a country label, and that went as up to 2005. And so then, you know, so it just never really quite did, you know, what they expected it to do. It's pretty cool, you know, stuff that was came out on there, you know, because you know, I remember the first band that signed them was Eels.
Yeah, the Eels. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which, who I love, you know. But yeah, at the same time, you know, they're, you know, Eels was never going to be like a pop powerhouse, you know, that, you know, all the kids were going to get into, you know. It was definitely, you know, a sort of a niche act, you know, and a really quality great one, but, you know, it was never going to sort of take over the world.
Yeah.
And you know, I think, you know, that again, you know, it's just music, you know, sort of underwent a huge sea change right around the time that they were trying to, you know, sort of get this thing off the ground. And so I can sort of see why it never quite took off.
Well, it's interesting how you mention, you know, that the Eels were probably never going to be like this, you know, pop powerhouse, because that seems to be sort of what the like Achilles heel might have been in the beginning, which was you had like three very, well, you had an executive, you know, which was mm-hmm. Katzenberg, and then you had Spielberg, who was a very creative, you know, individual, and then you had Geffen, who obviously had a knack for like finding people with, you know, big talent. But
yeah,
it seems like for the biggest part, in a lot of the entertainment stories I've read in the past and heard on the radio, for the most part, like what, 2/3 of the company were like people who were like really creative and not that interested in necessarily running a studio, but wanting to have the freedom to create their own product, you know what I'm saying? And not necessarily have to answer to like a large studio system, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I mean, that seems to be what kind of caused the unraveling of it, because from my understanding, and obviously not an expert, but it seems like Spielberg might have been the first one to go, you know, because he wasn't seeing that, you know, projects that he wanted to move forward with, you know, or
yeah, and you know,
make
there was
happen.
Always, there was always like a great deal of, you know, not, you know, by necessity, and then also out of, you know, ease of things. There was, you know, a lot of deals made with other studios to release, you know, DreamWorks things, you know, so DreamWorks would come up with something, but it would be released through Universal, or, you know, it would be released through Paramount or something. So, you know, in a way, that sort of kept it from, you know, the fact that like they were doing all of these partnerships, while, you know, it's very advantageous, you know, for them, it also sort of kept it from, you know, becoming, you know, sort of like the thing, like Universal. I mean, you know, if you think of Universal, you know, you think of Universal Studios, you think of like the, you know, the ride, you think of, you know, and even, you know, Disney, you know, it's got its own thing. And, you know, DreamWorks just sort of never, you know, it was never going to be that entity that had its own theme park. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, Warner Brothers doesn't necessarily have its own theme park, right?
No, but you know, to a degree they sort of do, because they've got the licensing out with Six Flags, you know, who uses Warner Brothers characters.
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing, well, just going back a little, I mean, obviously what started the whole like founding of DreamWorks is, you know, apparently, you know, the president of Walt Disney Studios, you know, Frank Wells, died in a tragic, you know, helicopter crash. Mm-hmm. And Michael Eisner at the time, who was not necessarily, you know, loved at the company during his tenure.
I don't think it's a secret. That was a super understated way of saying it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I try to be a little political here and there.
I get it. Yeah.
But, you know, and apparently Katzenberg was the chairman at Disney at the time, and was really angling for the job that was cleared out by Frank Wells. And so, and everything that I heard and read at the time, and, you know, have heard, you know, in current reporting about DreamWorks, was that, you know, Eisner kind of saw Katzenberg as possibly a threat, and then didn't want to give him, you know, the number two position in the company, even though a lot of people felt, you know, even though Katzenberg kind of rubbed people the wrong way at the studios, possibly not as much as Eisner, mostly the creative people. It seems like, you know, a lot of people felt like, yeah, Katzenberg probably deserved that post, you know? Mm-hmm. And so obviously he's waiting around to see who gets the job. And I can't remember at the time who Eisner promoted, but it wasn't Katzenberg. And so Katzenberg walked. And yeah. I remember that being like huge news at the time, just like gigantic, that he was like leaving, and it was this big kerfuffle. And it was sort of, you know, I mean, we're talking about, like, again, we're talking about the dude who helped engineer, you know, not just Touchstone Pictures.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, got stuff made, like, what, Down and Out in Beverly Hills?
Yeah, it's sort of impossible to, you know, sort of understate how big of a move this was in sort of corporate, just in the corporate world, and then in the entertainment industry too, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a really big deal.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when DreamWorks SKG, you know, was announced, you know, it just, I agree with you, it did really sort of feel like for a moment there, like, wow, you know, look at this amazing talent coming together. The sky's the limit here, you know?
It was like Obama. You know, it's like when Obama first showed up and everyone was like, oh my God, hope and change and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, like years later, you're sort of like, well, you know, Nice try. I mean, I guess, you know, we got some stuff done.
Obama's animation division has been pretty good. Actually, I mean, if you're really looking at, you know, the company as a whole, though, DreamWorks Animation is the most successful part of DreamWorks. You know, I mean, it's sort of the big powerhouse that sort of came out of there. And you know, looking at their franchises, I mean, it's pretty amazing. They've got the Shrek movies, they've got the Madagascar movies, they've got Kung Fu Panda, the How to Train Your Dragon movies. I think, did they do Monsters versus Aliens too?
Yes, Monsters vs. Aliens,
Monsters
yeah.
versus Aliens is a pretty successful movie for them too. And you know, they have done a really solid, you know, solid job. And you know, they've employed a lot of good animators.
Well, see, that's what I mean is what I don't get is if they've got these great franchises and stuff, but to me, it just doesn't seem like they can power through with something. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
Well,
look at say something like not even Frozen, Tangled, or I mean, you can't compare anything to Frozen. I mean, it's just like a juggernaut, right? I mean, it's huge. You can't, it's like The Lion King was. It's just like you can't you comparing it anything to the success of Frozen is unfair. But at the same time, it just doesn't seem like like DreamWorks, their properties are able to tap into the like zeitgeist. You know what I'm saying? There's like something missing, and I don't know what it is.
part of it relates to what you were talking about earlier. And that is the topical humor and the you know, sort of pop culture stuff. Because Shrek was very heavy in you know, in that. Madagascar, very heavy in that. They started moving away from it, you know, in more recent years. I think that that's to their credit, because for a while, I know for me, you know, the stereotypical sort of, you know, if you were to ask me what's a DreamWorks animation movie like, I would have said, oh, it's, you know, got a lot of you know, grown-up humor, you know, that goes sort of over the heads of the kids, and it's got a lot of pop culture references.
Well, yeah, and I think that you're definitely right that at some point it does seem to be like the easy way to produce stuff, like the easy way to make to write to I don't know what audience, you know, kids, adults or whatever, by making it less about, say, the heart of the material and more about like wink wink, like we're gonna make a joke about, you know, Shakira.
Hey,
You know, yeah. And
and you know,
that
just
ruins the timeliness
yeah,
of
stuff like
certain
that just
film.
doesn't, yeah, it doesn't you know, hold up in the long, you know, the long way, in the long run. It's gonna feel dated, you know. I mean, you're gonna have, you know, I mean, like Shark Tale, you know, who remembers Shark Tale
Oh,
now,
what a
you
piece of
know?
garbage. Yeah,
And
I never saw it, but.
yeah, yeah. I mean, again, you know, but they're unfortunate. You know, for every, you know, Kung Fu Panda or, you know, How to Train Your Dragon, you know, they had a Shrek 4, or you know, and then
Yeah.
a lot of the stuff they started doing is they started doing a lot of direct to DVD stuff. You know, they started doing a lot of sort of direct to home market sequels
So
to some of
what do
these
you
things.
think, but what do you think it is? Because does that make the studio reek of desperation? Because I kept thinking about like How to Train Your Dragon and How to Train Your Dragon 2. And I know that they came out with a TV show, which I think is available on like Netflix now. And, you know, does it seem like they seem to dilute their brands? Because like I kept thinking, what in my mind, as like a completely original computer animated movie, not taken from any other source, you know what I'm saying, has come out that is sort of on par with this sort of thing as far as, you know, the spectacle of it or just, you know, how good it was. And I just kept coming up with The Incredibles. And the thing is, in my mind, like Disney really, and Brad Bird really, and Pixar, obviously, they treated like The Incredibles as if it was something precious. Like, we're not going to make another one until we're ready. Like, how many years have we seen, like, Cars 2, or, now they're going to make Finding Nemo 2 or whatever, and been like, why aren't you making the one sequel that everyone wants? You know what I'm saying? And to me, it seems like that if you're just going to keep pumping out like straight to DVD videos, it seems like there's a lack of creativity or faith in their own talent to like build something completely new out of whole cloth. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, it's the, it's the desire to, I guess, sort of ride the franchise. You know what I mean? That's the sort of the whole point of
It's the
a
safe
lot of
track.
things. It is a very safe track, because look, Shrek, the Shrek movies did very, very well for them.
Yeah, I remember the first one.
The first two, I think, are still
Yeah.
pretty strong movies
My
overall.
daughter loves Shrek. Like, she loves Shrek, you know?
And it it's just that when
They
you're
ran it into the
doing a new
ground.
one, when you're doing a new one every, year, every 2 years, that does, sort of dilute the brand. And then again, they tried to, spin off Puss in Boots and,
Oh, yeah. I completely forgot about that.
there's a, I think you're right. To a degree, you do have to sort of take your product and keep it special, which is,
Yeah.
Disney's very fortunate in the sense that, they have Disney proper, and then there's also Pixar, which is, its own thing, and I don't think that there's necessarily quite the pressure to come up with, a franchise every time. It's like you can create something like Frozen and ride that longer, by making fewer movies about it, in a way that you that Dream where DreamWorks would have to, in order sort of to create the same or an equivalent buzz or income on it, they would have to make multiple movies about it. It's just I can't quite explain it,
Well,
and
it's interesting because I mean, it's sort of like, I guess what we're saying is that even though DreamWorks is an animation studio, I mean, they're just not as large as like something like Disney. They can't keep taking chances on, a new property that just might flop. But then is the answer to take a risk on smaller ideas and smaller budgets? Does every movie have to be 150,000, 150 million dollars?
I don't know, because it's really interesting. I mean, DreamWorks has taken a lot of risks in terms of the movies that they've made.
Well, in the beginning, yeah.
In the beginning, I mean, for sure. I mean, my God, their first movie was Ants,
No, their first movie was
wasn't it?
The Prince of Egypt.
Oh, that's right, Prince of
Yeah.
Egypt and
Their
Ants.
first CGI
Those were
movie was Ants.
the same
Yeah.
year, yeah. And like those are two very unusual, animated movies.
But let me tell you something about The Prince of Egypt, because that's on Netflix too. And I saw The Prince of Egypt in the theater, and I recently watched it on Netflix again with my daughter, and it's fantastic. I mean, I think it's really beautifully designed, beautifully executed. I mean, it's biblical. It's a really good take on that, Moses, that Moses mythology or whatever you want to call
Well, it was
it.
cool because, like, right out of the gate, they were just like, okay, we're going to do this just epic thing. Like, we're, they were aiming for the Lawrence of Arabia of animation,
Yeah, and also
and
something kind of adult in a way, you know?
so, that was really cool. And
Yeah.
I think that's something that will, have a life of its own. for a long time because it's so good. But at the same time, that's not going to sell a lot of toys.
Well, that's true.
You know?
And you know, that I mean, that kind of, I guess, sadly is the bottom line. But it's also true that I think if you said the Prince of Egypt to anyone, they would be like, I don't know what you're talking about. It wouldn't be like something else that Disney released, like, say, Tarzan,
Yeah.
the Hunchback, where you would say to somebody, you would mention that film and people would be like, oh yeah, I remember that. I think the Prince of Egypt is something that, like, very much like disappeared a little bit into the dustbin of, movie history, because it came out, it was kind of a good success, but it didn't do, like, whatever Little Mermaid or Lion King numbers.
Well, because
And
it's not going to capture, first of all, it's not a musical.
well, yeah,
And
that's
that,
there
you
are
know,
music, there is music in it, but it's not a musical. Yeah.
yeah. And that does make a big difference. I think that that's one of the things that Disney does really well, especially is the musical animated movie. Because because then you've got soundtrack sales on top of that, in a way that you're not going to have with just like a regular, movie soundtrack.
Well, yeah, that's funny that you mentioned that too, because I remember seeing the first Shrek and being like really disappointed that they weren't original music numbers, that they were just sticking in like whatever
Oh,
Smash
hey,
Mouth or
you had
whatever the
Smash
hell,
Mouth, man.
and
They
all these other like pop tunes, and I was
wrote
like,
that Smash Mouth song
yeah, no
like
shit.
into the ground, man.
I totally did. And so much so that if my daughter hears that like on the radio, she's like, oh, that's from Shrek. And I'm like, no, sweetie, that's not from Shrek. Not that it's some like classic, rock ballad or something, but the fact that, and then there's a couple of Weezer songs that I think they used, right? I could be wrong. And my daughter will hear that and she'll be like, oh, that's from Shrek, right? I'll be like, yeah, that's from Shrek. But that's the thing. It's like, it again, that seems to play into sort of a lack of creativity, but at the same time, I seem to remember maybe admiring them for sort of like taking a chance at doing like something like that, which is not something that an animated film had really done before, right?
No, I mean, definitely not. And even Shrek, like, look, one of the reasons why Shrek did so well was because of the like adult humor and the stuff, and the
Yeah,
pop culture references and
that's
stuff. You know,
true.
like it was different. It was sort of it was cheekier than anything that, Disney was doing or even Pixar. Like it was different.
It's
It's just
true.
something that,
And
and
it was
that's
poking fun at Disney too.
absolutely. The
Yeah.
whole fairy tale kingdom and everything. Like that's why it did so well. It's just that, you can only sort of ride that horse once or twice, and then they proceeded to, sort of go back to that style for their next, bunch of movies.
Yeah, and using it as a crutch. It's funny because you're talking about Shrek and we're talking about how it kind of poked fun at Disney and kind of went its own way. I remember the thing that I really loved about Shrek. When I was like probably 17 or 18, I saw Beauty and the Beast in the theater because obviously, I mean, I've just always been into animation. I've always been into cartoons. I've always been into comics. I've always been interested in that sort of thing. And I remember really liking Beauty and the Beast up until the very end. And that was a movie, of course, I had a hotter temper back then, more than 20 years ago, but it pissed me off because I was like, what kind of message? Because by the end of the movie, the beast is like just as good looking as the villain, and he's like strapping, he looks like Fabio when he turns into a human. And I was like, what message is this that you're sending to little girls? Like what are you trying to say? Like if you just stick with like a beast for long enough, you're going to be able to change him into like whatever you want him to be, or like some fantasy man. And I remember that the beauty of Shrek was that Fiona got changed into an ogre, and because of their true love, and that she wasn't attractive, and that's not what mattered, And I was like, that was bold. Like I remember, and I think that was the strength behind Shrek, not necessarily the humor that we're all talking about, but was the very sort of like great morality play that it ended up being, which is like that what it's not outside what matters, it's kind of like what's inside, right?
Yeah, and that's a great lesson. It's just that, like, man, like, they rode that theme
Yeah.
quite into the ground too,
They just
because
ran it.
that's the theme of a lot of their movies. It's Kung Fu Panda. Like, it's very much that. Look, what I particularly liked Kung Fu Panda because I
I
thought it was
loved
like
it.
a really good kung fu movie.
Yeah.
I mean, not just an animated movie. It worked as a kung fu movie.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that I really appreciated about it, is that, like, oh, they were trying to do something, outside of, what you're used to seeing in an animated film. As a matter of fact,
Yeah.
honestly, the only sort of series from DreamWorks that I just really don't love at all is the Madagascar series.
You know what? It's funny they that I we saw I think Amy and I saw the first one before Talon was born in the theater. Again, because I'm into animation. And I remember her kind of like thinking it was okay and me being like, "Eh, you know." But we saw the third this last third one because again, my daughter wanted to see it, so we all went to see it, and it was really funny.
Oh,
I was
good.
like, I couldn't believe how funny, like how much of an improvement it was, you know,
Oh,
in the
good.
fact that, you know, things kind of kept, you know, coming, you know what I mean? As far as like the laughs, you know, were concerned. Is it, you know, is it in the league of like Frozen? Is it in the league of How to Train Your Dragon 2? No, but not every animated movie has to be, right? They sort of embraced a very sort of like Chuck Jones slapstick
Oh, cool.
feel with the third one.
Well,
And I
that's
think
good.
it's worth watching if you just want to
I
laugh.
might take a look at that then.
Yeah.
DreamWorks also partnered with Aardman to do Chicken Run.
That's
They
right.
released Chicken Run, which was really cool. I mean, stop motion animation and sort of a takeoff on not just cartoons, but also of, like, The Great Escape and, World War II movies, for of all things,
Yeah. Well, and they did a couple of others with Aardman, didn't they? Not just
I think so.
yeah.
And then, but let's see, what have they done most recently? You've got The Croods.
Oh yeah, that was actually really good too. The
Okay.
Croods.
I didn't see it because, like, it just, again, like, as for me, it just didn't really have a super big appeal to me. But it and as a teacher, I know that, like, a lot of my kids liked Turbo, but for me, it's like not
I
something
didn't
that
see
I'm
that.
going to go out and see. But no, not really. Like, I mean, all the kids love Turbo, man. On the, when they're out on the playground running around, like, they're arguing about which snail they're going to be,
Well, see, and that's the thing. The thing that again, and I that I keep hammering my head against, like what is it about them if all the kids like them, if they're decent movies, are we just saying that they don't have the infrastructure, the resources, the powerhouse, you know, licensing and marketing group to push them through to the next level? Or is it to a certain extent? Because you look at Kung Fu Panda, and while you and I really like it and think it's really fun, there's a certain feel to some of those characters that I think that to adults could be a little annoying if overplayed too much. You know what I'm saying? Like I could definitely see somebody getting sick of like Kung Fu Panda being on the DVD player like over and over and over. You know what I'm saying? Even though I love it, there is that sort of like, you know, hey, wisecracky, you know, again, sort of like feel to it that I think adults may not, you know, gel to as well. I don't know. I don't know. Or I could be misinformed about that. I love Kung Fu Panda. I have it on Blu-ray. I bought the second one on Blu-ray. I love the second one. You know, I just don't understand. Like, if the kids love them, which my daughter does,
Well,
why don't
again,
they have much of a presence?
I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that they don't have a theme park experience behind them, man. because
Really?
that makes
It
that
can't
makes a
just be theme parks. It's got to be something else, right?
No, I think that's a lot of it because I mean you look with Disney and Pixar things, you have like a place you can go to sort of experience that thing, you know? I mean even you've got that with Star Wars now. I mean you've got and you don't really have that for DreamWorks. I mean what do you have? You've got I'm looking in here, apparently you have the DreamWorks experience that you can go to on Royal Caribbean cruise ships.
Yeah, but Marvel doesn't have that. DC Comics doesn't have that.
Yeah, but that's a little different though because like I don't think you necessarily needed those for comic book things, you know. And and those things will be coming, believe me. You know, like that they're on their way.
But isn't it, I mean, it's got to be something more complex than that because I just can't believe that it's like, oh, just because of Disneyland or Disney World that Disney, that Disney's properties resonate with the public more than, say, like
There's that
DreamWorks.
and the market, again, the marketing behind it. I mean, you look, Disney has television networks, they have radio networks, they have, all of these things that DreamWorks doesn't.
Yeah, I but that's the thing is like what I don't get is like where are all the toys and where are all the statues and where are all the what I mean? Like
Yeah,
I would buy a How to Train Your Dragon.
they're out there.
Like out here, hold on, I'm looking at
No,
Amazon.
they're out there because I mean, I went by Target today to, just pick up some dog food and look at walking by the toy aisle. There's there's tons of How to Train Your Dragon stuff out there.
Oh, I haven't, I guess I haven't been to Target all that much lately. But yeah, I'm looking on Amazon and it looks like there's some stuff there. I don't know. That's the thing is like, it sounds weird for me to be like, I guess what I want is for How to Train Your Dragon 2 to do really well. But it's like, there's something about them that, again, Megamind, Monsters vs. Aliens, Kung Fu Panda, How to Train Your Dragon. It seems like they are doing these adventure films that boys would really like. That if I was like 8 to 10, I'd be like, this is awesome. You know what I mean? And that would just tap into what I'm really into. But is it because there's a glut? Is it because the Avengers are there just as well as How to Train Your Dragon? Is it because, I don't know. And now Star Wars, it just seems like, are they just being crowded out? Is that part of it too?
I don't know. I mean, there's in a way, I feel like they can do really well, but they won't ever quite have sort of the respectability because they don't have, look, the thing about a theme park is that it gives your product physical longevity. You know what I mean? Think about like Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, all of those things. I mean, there are rides based on that thing. There's, buildings based on that thing. There's a physical longevity there. Even outside of like toys or anything like that, like, it exists, in a way that some of these other things don't. I mean, look at, like what you've got with Universal now. You've got like the Harry Potter, world and things like that. I mean, it's, I think in a way, properties need, certainly, kid properties and things like that, they need like a physical place to continue in a way in order to maintain a longevity beyond just like the DVD or, or the streaming.
That just seems weird to me because I mean Disneyland existed. I mean, I went when I was a kid, but I mean, I didn't see that as like the thing that kept me interested. Maybe it's media presence. They don't have enough media presence. I don't know. I mean, now they have this deal with Netflix where they're, producing Turbo as an original show for Netflix, original animated show. But I don't know. It just seems like their media penetration, and to me, it just doesn't make sense that it's just about the theme park, that it's just about that kids can go to, a place and see the characters like jumping around or go on rides. I don't know. I don't know. In any case, I think that there's got to be something that I guess part of the reason that I feel frustrated about it is because as much as I love everything that Disney is doing, like I was having a conversation with a friend of mine whose brother works at DreamWorks, and I was like, oh man, you got to tell your brother that that movie was awesome. It was fantastic. I loved it. And then, in the course of the conversation, I was like, I'm so bummed, that it didn't make a ton of money. But we were talking and he was saying like, he's like, the good thing about DreamWorks and the good thing about Disney and all that stuff is that, that they make each other compete against each other. So that like, Pixar, DreamWorks, Disney, DreamWorks, like anytime DreamWorks kind of like raises the bar, it makes any other animation studio or, Disney with Frozen, it makes everybody else go, huh? And I think before DreamWorks, there really wasn't anything like that. I mean, now you have Sony Animation and then you have Warner Brothers Animation, but there's nobody else like really doubling down on, at least to me, on animated features that have like big spectacle and characters that could be really mined for, licensing opportunities. And it just seems like they just kind of like, or maybe I'm just not exposed to it. I'm not a little kid, but it just seems like there's not a huge penetration of that company. And it makes me feel bad because I think that they do really well. And just because DreamWorks is successful doesn't mean that Disney doesn't have to be. You know what I'm saying? Like they can both do really well. I mean, I think part of their problem is their release schedule because, I guess the first How to Train Your Dragon, again, talking to my friend, he was like, yeah, the first one got released against The Hangover 2. And I was like, who's the jackass that's scheduling these movies against these big comedies? You know what I mean? Like, what is the
Well,
problem?
the release schedule is only going to get like more crowded and
I
more
know.
saturated as we, as we go on. So,
Holy cow. You're
I
not
mean,
kidding.
that's something that's sort of not going away. One of the things maybe I'm hoping that maybe with DreamWorks is that they might have like a actual like sort of if they're I seem to remember that their movies stick around quite a bit in the theater for a pretty long time, so maybe that's sort of their thing is that they do have like a bit of a longer release time for some of their features. So, maybe that's a something that helps them out. But I just know that, again, I know kids like them, and I think that one of the things that's really interesting too is I feel like DreamWorks Animation really did sort of make their bones in the DVD market. You know what I mean? Like that's where they really sort of like saturated, reached their kids and reached people. That was like, the same way that Disney did with the VHS, because Disney was all about those like, sort of limited release VHS things. And it'll be interesting as things move more toward streaming and whatever. I think that maybe DreamWorks has been pretty savvy with this Netflix deal because if you do like the How to Train Your Dragon, you do have this show that you can go to now and watch that, so that might be sort of a wave of the future.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because I mean, Disney also has a deal with Netflix where they're putting all their stuff. So it's like you pull up Netflix and there's all this Disney stuff too. So it just seems like, again, they might be crowded out, in that, in that space. But going back to a little bit to what you were talking about as far as like the co-production aspect of DreamWorks, I'm looking at the list of DreamWorks Pictures films on Wikipedia, and when you look down the notes column, there's a lot of them that are co-productions. Co-productions with 20th Century Fox, co-production with Columbia Pictures, co-production with Universal Studios. It almost kind of gives you the feel, and I wonder if this is true in the industry, that DreamWorks never really had the strength to sort of like stand on its own as a company. Because I know for a fact that this last one, again, How to Train Your Dragon 2, was done with Fox, because the Fox logo came up. It was the first thing, and it was like, dun, da, 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 da. And I was like, wait a minute. Am I watching the wrong movie? And then the DreamWorks logo came up. So it's interesting to me that I'm wondering if DreamWorks Animation could become something like Pixar, where another studio just buys it outright and DreamWorks becomes the animation division of Warner Brothers or, Universal or whatever, I hope not.
It's it's we'll see. I know that. Look, for the longest time, they had the goal of releasing a very ambitious, like five. They wanted to do five animated features a year.
When was this?
It was in the few years ago that they wanted that. And they've scaled that back to three. I think for the last 2 or 3 years, they've done three animated features a year.
Have they?
Yeah.
That's crazy because if they have, I mean, I don't think a lot of us have taken notice. What came out last year? It was Turbo. I remember
Turbo,
that.
The Croods, and
The Croods.
yeah, and then there's this year it's been did Croods overlap with with this year's release?
The Croods, I believe, was last year. I
Yeah.
saw it in the theater.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that's at least two, right? And then those are two movies that it's
Oh,
funny.
Rise of the Guardians.
Oh,
Yeah.
there's another great one that just totally like flopped, Like
Yeah.
that was a great, that was like, okay, like Rise of the Guardians to me
Yeah.
was, you know what that was? That was the very first action holiday movie. You know what I'm saying? Like the very first holiday theme movie that was like an action adventure. I mean, maybe besides like one of the Die Hard movies or something, but one that you could take your kids to.
Yeah.
And that was beautiful and it was well done. And you know what? I have to get the art book for that movie because DreamWorks, anytime they come out with a movie, I buy the art books because they're
Yeah.
so gorgeous. Like, that's really interesting. But you know what's really popping into my head is I'm wondering, you mentioned the Croods. I'm wondering if there's something about the character design of their characters that is a little too complex or a little too, gosh, what's the word that I'm looking for? I guess
Photorealistic kind of, or
not necessarily photorealistic, but not simplistic enough. You know what I
yeah.
mean? It's like when you look at, say, something like Woody, or Buzz Lightyear. It's not that they're simple designs,
Yeah,
but there's
yeah.
like sort of an elegance to them. There's sort of a brightness to them. When you look at Frozen, the
I
two
agree.
characters are, there's something that is not generic, but is generic at the same time. Something that your brain, there's a familiarity to it. And it seems like thinking on the DreamWorks characters, with the ex there's a lot of sort of like maybe a darker palette. Like around their characters, maybe there's a lot more detail to their costumes,
Yeah.
and maybe that's them trying to prove what they can do with CGI. But at the same time, maybe there's something in that is not allowing viewers to say to like the brains to just go like immediately click and go, oh, that's Woody. Oh, that's
Yeah.
Elsa. Oh,
Well,
that's,
Croods did really well, by the way. It like
Did it?
it made almost $600 million.
Really? Good for them.
These don't do spectacular box office because for the most part they do. How to Train Your Dragon 2 is really sort of the only one that's like sort of underperforming.
Well, let me see. I'm scrolling down this
Well, yeah,
list.
like you said, Rise of the Guardians. But I mean, Rise of the Guardians was
Well,
sort of a
Turbo
tough.
didn't do so great either.
Yeah, huh. It's funny because, and that's where, again, the most of the kids who I talk to who know Turbo know it from the TV series.
Really?
Yep, not from the
From
movie.
the thing on Netflix. Wow, that's interesting. That's so funny to me. I mean, I find that really crazy. I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the posters. You know, Mr. Peabody and Sherman. That's another one. You know, apparently they just purchased that whole library. You know, I forget what the studio is that was behind Mr. Peabody. Whoa, oh, it's on the tip of my tongue. Something media. Something.
Is
I
it
can't.
Walden Media?
No,
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 that
no.
they're out. They're not in
Yeah,
business
no.
anymore.
But Mr. Peabody and Sherman, I think that did okay too. And that was a movie that my daughter saw the trailer for, and she's like, "We have to go see that." And is the very first trailer that I've ever heard her quote things from, where she's walking around and talking, and there was something about it that she really loved. Now, for me,
Classic media.
classic media, that for me, that was it was like, okay, that was okay. It wasn't super great. You know, it wasn't on the level of like Kung Fu Panda for me. But it does show that they are able to tap into something in the kid's brain that gets them interested. But what I don't see is kids walking around with Kung Fu Panda plush or How to Train Your Dragon t-shirts or, you know,
I do see that,
do
and
you?
that's, yeah, because I'm a teacher, yeah, I do see kids, now granted, again, it's nowhere close to the Disney, marketing juggernaut, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As and especially with girls, I mean, the princess thing owns the girls,
No shit. Yeah.
I do see, with boys, it's primarily superheroes. But yeah, they do have some Kung Fu Panda shirts, and every now and again, I will see, it's just it's not as popular, and I think a lot of that, honestly, it has to do with kid peer pressure. You like when you're a kid, you generally, unless you're an exceptional kid, you like what your friends like. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? And look, I dig. As I could imagine digging, How to Train Your Dragon, but I mean, let's face it, all the kids love Batman. They all love Superman.
Yeah,
What's
yeah.
kind of funny, here's the other crazy thing. I've heard all of my kids referring to Superman as the Man of Steel. I know.
Garbage.
But that's what they call it. They call him that. They call him the Man of Steel. So I'm like, oh, okay.
You know what's interesting? Do you think that, and this is the first time I've ever had this thought, that the reason that the princesses are so popular with the girls is because they don't have a lot of options? Like as far as like in the media stuff to identify with?
Yes,
Like
and
directly see something that I'm a girl that speaks to me, like this is sort of like heroic, or this is sort of, you know, there's a story behind it that I can tap
well,
into.
yeah, because I mean, you've got like sort of your generic sort of like Barbie stuff, you've got like a lot of these things that, that's basically you projecting, what you want onto these like things, that they don't really have their own stories. Or then you've got like the stories that you kind of live through and stuff like that. I think that, that the girls do identify with that very well.
Maybe that's part. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe here's the thing, you know. Maybe the flaw is that the DreamWorks is slightly too boy oriented, and that market is just oversaturated, and maybe that's why they can't bust through. Because I'm looking through the posters on Google right now, and it's all, with the exception of Monsters versus Aliens, you know, because you have Monica. Or what Ginormica, yeah, Ginormica, excuse me. I think that's what she's called. I can't remember. That's bad. But with the exception of that, there's barely any female presence on any of these posters, at least being front and center. You know what I'm saying? And maybe part of the reason that Disney is so successful is because they've tapped into a market that pretty much everyone else ignores.
Yeah.
Our male-dominated society.
And now, and again, now they really own that market. I mean, there is nothing else compared to the Disney princess except for Barbie. As terms of
but
popularity.
But Barbie's kind of losing its popularity as well because of the stigma that it kind of carries with it, which is like, you know, you got to be perfect. You know,
just a thing real quick. I noticed this earlier. DreamWorks just bought Felix the Cat.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they just bought the rights to Felix the Cat. So it would be interesting. Actually, Scott Shaw just threw up a little thing about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It should be interesting because, like, DreamWorks, you know, has, you know, look, Warner Brothers has Bugs Bunny. You know, Disney has that mouse. What's his
name? Mickey.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got... you know, DreamWorks, while they do have some, like, you know, great stories, you know, and they've got, you know, some recognizable things like Shrek and everything, they don't have, like, an animated character who's sort of like their figurehead.
Well, I always thought that was Shrek.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, kind of is, but I mean, you know, there hasn't been a new Shrek movie in quite a while.
Well, but there hasn't been a new Mickey Mouse movie in a long time. I mean, he's got a show.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's, but, he's kind of become the figurehead of the
company.
But
it'll be interesting to see if DreamWorks, like, sort of manages to make Felix their Mickey, you know?
Oh, no, because Mickey was the original creation of Walt Disney. They need something. They shouldn't do that because, like, and that's what I don't understand, like, buying Peabody and Mr. Sherman and now Felix the Cat. What kid recognizes that property?
No, they here's the thing. They don't, but, you know, there is clearly something there, you know, and yeah, obviously, you know, it certainly Mr. Peabody and Sherman resonated, you know, with your daughter, you know, I mean, like, I think if anything, I think it's really smart of them because otherwise these things sort of will sort of end up being lost in time. You know what I mean? And
well, but maybe there's a reason for that too.
Maybe there is, but, you know, maybe the, you know, I think it's a pretty smart thing for them to do because, you know, at least they can give it a try. And if, you know, and if there is a reason and they do sort of need to, you know, fade into time, then that'll happen. But, you know, if there happens to be something there that still resonates, you know, it's a chance to remake this thing that, you know, otherwise would have been lying dormant. It's actually a pretty smart business model.
I don't know about that because I honestly feel like, you know, Peabody and Mr. Sherman, obviously they made a good enough film and a great enough trailer that my daughter, who, you know, she's seven, you know, was interested in seeing it and really wanted to see it. So, but I just don't understand why you wouldn't do that with original characters that you would own lock, stock, and barrel. And quite honestly, look, I may offend some people, but who gives a shit about Mr. Peabody and Sherman? Who remembered him except for fans of animation like us, you know, like when we were little kids, or like, that's the thing that I don't, or Felix the Cat, really? Was anyone dying for a Felix the Cat movie? Why not make up your own cat and make a movie out of that? And then you own it lock, stock, and barrel, and you can make it the figurehead of your company, you know? Yeah. Maybe the thing with Shrek, maybe them not making him the figurehead of that their company is because he is like maybe visually weird looking or unappealing. But if you were to make your own cat or something that was cute and you put that on your masthead like Walt Disney has, you know, and said like, this is our mouse. He's really cute. He's got a great personality. This is what you think of whenever maybe they could have something. But now Felix the Cat, it's just like, that's old, you know? And I think it makes a lot of people go like, I mean, huh? Really? Why are you doing that? I mean, you know, I'm not saying that they won't make something good out of it, you know, because I really feel that there's talented people over there, but I just don't get why you would do that. And instead of like, again, focusing on something new and coming up, I guess maybe they're risk averse.
Let me tell you exactly what it is. I mean, here's the quote. He's a true icon. So they plan to make him one of the most desired fashion brands. It's all about branding and, and making, this one's all about creating things that sell.
And I get it. I get that. I understand that. I just think that you could take Kung Fu Panda and make him
Well,
like a fashion brand. You know what I'm saying?
one of the
He's
things
just
that
as cute.
I agree, he's totally cute, but here's the other thing that we haven't really touched on. With Shrek, with Kung Fu Panda, you have these characters that are very much tied to a singular actor
Yeah, that's
in a
true.
way that you don't see in a lot of the other animated things. I mean, Shrek is Mike Myers, Kung Fu Panda is Jack Black,
Yeah, that's a good point.
and we all know that actors sort of have their waxing and waning too, and let's face it, if you tie too much of your company's, brand or whatever into an actor, you're going to get let down.
Oh man, that is a really good point. Very smart. So, I mean, it's almost an argument against like casting big celebrities as
Yeah.
your.
I mean, in a way, I mean, look, one of the things that's genius about Frozen is, that they went with what's Idina Menzel or
Yeah.
Adele Dazeem,
You're
like
pulling a John
exactly.
Travolta.
I mean, that's genius because like you're getting like someone with a fantastic voice, as the character, and it's not like you're seeing that actor. You know what I mean? I mean, even The Incredibles, which had fantastic actors, name actors behind it, like you don't see them in, it's not the same way in the way that like, wow, like seriously, can you imagine them trying to do a Shrek without it being Mike Myers?
Yeah, and that's what I was just gonna say is like part that's it's kind of like a double-edged sword because part of the reason for Shrek's huge success, you have to admit, is Mike Myers. You know what I mean? Is the fact that he did that. I don't think so much Kung Fu Panda has that as well because I think that Shrek, used Mike Myers like the persona that he created, that Scottish character that he created sort of almost like, for SNL and out of whole cloth, whereas Kung Fu Panda is kind of like just Jack Black being a little bit of Jack Black, you know what I'm saying?
And Kung Fu Panda has a, their TV show where they use a different actor,
Yeah, I
too.
guess so, huh?
That's, but it's I just noticed that, while I was looking over the list of things. I mean, even to a degree, Madagascar, you had,
Yeah, Chris
you
Rock.
had Chris Rock, who, I mean, who was that, he was that character there, and so it's really hard to try to make these movies without those actors.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And like you said, when licensing and money like that is tied in, I can imagine that they get a huge take and a big say in what, what gets sold and what doesn't. But it's funny because I'm looking at the poster for Rise of the Guardians, which was like one of my favorites. And I gotta stand by my sort of like theory of the character design because the character design in Rise of the Guardians is beautiful, but it's very complex. You know what I mean? It's they're not simplistic looking characters. They don't sort of evoke like a blank template sort of feel the way some other movies do, where it's just like it this is a princess and this is and she looks very much like the other princesses. She's non-threatening. She's not, scary in any way. It's interesting. I mean, I mean, I'm sure there's much more complex reasons as to why. I mean, I really f that's the thing is I really feel that they're making some really good movies. I feel like How to Train Your Dragon 2 is freaking like my third favorite action movie of this year after The Raid 2, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and then you've got How to Train Your Dragon, in there. Like, that. Obviously, I don't go to the movies as much as I used to, but out of the movies that I, the adventure movies that I've seen that have been the most entertaining, I mean, How to Train Your Dragon 2 is even up there beyond, whatchamacallit, Days of Future Past. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how much I loved it.
Oh,
like,
good.
And maybe I liked it so much because I was so let down by Godzilla, you know, because Godzilla, I wanted monsters fighting and blah, blah, blah. And this movie just gave me that visual eye candy where I was just like, you know, it's not live action. You can tell it's computer animation, but still it, at the same time, it was like, look, when an animated character, a CGI animated character can evoke emotion from me and actually get me teary eyed and get my daughter crying, full on crying in the seat next to me, more and emotionally affects me more than Godzilla, which is supposed to be like a scary, like on the edge of your seat thing. They're doing something right, you know, and you know, that's it. So I don't know. I would recommend you see at least the first How to Train Your Dragon, Paul. I think you would really like it.
I might take a look at that.
You should. You should. Any other last thoughts before we take off?
Just, other than, you know, I mean, DreamWorks, I'd love to see them, you know, stick around and keep making stuff. Again, for just the reason that you were talking about, you know, the competition. I think competition's good and it does make everybody else work harder.
Yeah.
Two things that I noticed. These are completely off topic. There's going to be a Django Unchained Zorro crossover comic book.
Oh.
That Quentin Tarantino is going to be making with Matt Wagner.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Which I think would be really, really neat. The other thing is the there's some traction coming on the Ghostbusters 3 front.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
I could give a shit. It's too late now. It's too
late. I agree.
It's done. Did you see Max Landis's thoughts on how he would open
the
movie?
Was a nifty thought. You know?
I thought that was a nice little, that was like kind of cool.
15 years ago, that would have been great.
Yeah, I know, right? It's done. Stick a fork in it. Just let me have my memories of the first movie. The second movie I hated. Maybe I need to watch it again, but I love the first movie. And that's the thing is, Ghostbusters 3, really, like, who's going to get excited about that? You know, Ivan Reitman's dead, you know, and Bill Murray doesn't seem like he gives a shit. And Dan Aykroyd just seems like pathetic, you know, trying to keep this thing going. He doesn't need the, I don't know, does he need the money? Does he need a project that badly? I mean, Dan Aykroyd's a really good actor. He can do anything. Why does he want to do this? It's just time to let it go, Paul. I'm not excited about that at all.
I agree.
I'm not. Well, anyway, to just go back to DreamWorks for a second, you know, and what you were saying is like, I hope that they stick around. The reason that I hope that they stick around, even though I think that the reason that maybe a lot of their stuff isn't taking hold is because the boy market is way too saturated, is that they make like the really cool, neat, animated like adventure movies that, you know, it kind of reminds me of like the Hanna-Barbera stuff when we were a kid, obviously more intense and more sophisticated. But, you know, the great thing about Hanna-Barbera was they made stuff for boys. You know what I'm saying? Like that, the adventure stuff for boys.
Right.
Not that there needs to be more of that, but at least on a CGI level, you know, it's like this is the sort of thing that when I go, it just taps into my like, you know, 15, 14 year old mind. And I'm like, this is so much fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they make fun stuff and God knows we need more fun stuff. Much fun stuff.
I agree about that.
Cool. All right. Well, this has been Part-Time Fanboy. I'm Christian Horn and I'm here with Paul Edwards. And this has been our DreamWorks chat. Hopefully Mr. Katzenberg will listen to this at some point. And
hey, big fan of your work if you are, man.
Yeah. Don't kill us, please, for any negative things that we said. All right. Thanks for joining us. Have a good week. Bye.
Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. graduate part-time.